C2SP. Number 12B.
So that man is God's own. God owns us. At surrendering, that is very seldom. Usually it says man is God's image and likeness, or is man is the likeness of God or the image of God. Here it is different, and it's very unique in the textbook, that it really wants to show that God is conscious of himself and therefore has its own likeness. He, as if God would own it and says, this is my likeness. And this sets, and this is another important point, sets man free to master the infinite idea. This has always puzzled some students, and has puzzled me naturally also for a long time as a student. How can I be a master over an idea when an idea is bigger than I am? I can never be above and superior to the idea. But I think what she wants to bring out, or what I see that she brings out, is that if we go out from God and see that man is God's own likeness, then we see that God is master over everything, that then God is operating us, is demonstrating us the way God wants to demonstrate us, that he is unfolding us the way God wants to unfold us. And so that sets us free to master the infinite idea. When we go out, say, if we are well trained in the numeration table in arithmetic and know our digits and know the operation of the digits, we can say, now I can master every calculation. That does not mean that I can master it, but the understanding that what arithmetic is makes us a master to solve the problems in the realm of arithmetic. So here again we can see that whatever the problem is, whatever the situation is, we can know that we are master over it because, or let's say, under the condition that we take the standpoint of science and not of metaphysics, where in metaphysics we handle ideas, then we cannot master them, we just can't calculate them. But when we take the standpoint of science instead of metaphysics, that's why I like you to study that booklet that I have written just recently about metaphysics and science and Christian science, because that shows the moment I take the standpoint of science, of God, then God is using me. I am the reflection of God, and through that we master every situation, we master every problem, we calculate every problem. So that the idea comes to me that are necessary for the solution, and so gives us a sense of mastering a problem. This conviction, now it must be a conviction, it must not be just a statement, it must not just be the repetition of a sentence, it must be an inner conviction. Therefore, sentences like these, like the one we had right before, is a sentence that needs pondering, that needs really thinking about it, seeing the bigness of it, seeing the promise of it, seeing what it can do, and anticipating also the power of it and the demonstration of it. Only in this way the statement becomes an inner conviction, becomes an inner certainty. And only when we have that inner certainty, then this conviction only can shut the door on death. That brings the annihilation of the belief of death and opens it wide towards immortality. So here we have a clear-cut statement. What brings immortality? Not death, not spirits, nothing like that, but the conviction that man is God's own likeness. Not that we are the likeness of God. That seems not to be strong enough, so to say. It's true, but it's the approach to it. So always when we say and start out with the sentence, man is, then it's the danger that we start out with man and think about us and say man is the likeness of God. But we have, so to say, a wrong starting point, or I would say not a high enough starting point, really. But when we see that God's own likeness is man, then we start out with God. God never loses sight of its own idea, of its own likeness, its own. It is therefore one with man, therefore one with its expression. And so it gives a much stronger sense of the unity of God and man, and not just an attempt of man being one with God and unite with God. That was all so through prayer and atonement and Eucharist and marriage that we tried to find our unity with God. Now it's different. It's showing us that God's own likeness is called man. And the center is God, and we contemplate really the bigness of God and see, and that has its own son. We are the heir of that God, and so we can see that in this case, naturally, we should be master over the infinite idea. This conviction shuts the door, etc. The understanding and recognition of spirit must finally come. Now she takes the relative standpoint and says, this statement that was made from God's point of view, that we admit God's standpoint, the admission to oneself that I take God's standpoint and see God's own reflection, that is a method, that is a beginning. And that the understanding of that, of the recognition of spirit, must finally come. So here it's the relative sense, it must finally come. Well, naturally we have to do something about it, that it finally comes. And that is what she then shows through the main tones, how we arrive at that very point. And we may as well improve our time in solving the mysteries of being through an apprehension of divine principle. So, again, the relative standpoint that says we must apprehend the divine principle, and going out from that, then, step by step, the final recognition of spirit will come. At present, we know not what man is. Isn't it interesting that she would say something like that when she explains in the whole textbook what man is? It says what that man is idea, that man is the idea of God, that man is the image and likeness of God, and then she says at present we know not what man is. Isn't it interesting? She really wants to show you, you know, what you actually have gained by learning that man is the idea of God and that man is the image and likeness of God is a statement. You don't know it really. You don't really understand it. If you would understand it, you wouldn't be here. If you would understand that man is God's own likeness, we wouldn't be sitting here. We wouldn't have a body. We would have had the ascension behind us. So it's sometimes very good to shake us up as here. And she said, well, at present you don't know it. You only read and learn that man is God's likeness, but actually you don't know it yet. If you would understand it finally, then if that understanding and the recognition would be if we would have it completely, we would not have a body, because spirit has no body. So she puts us right back to earth and says, look here, At present we know not what man is, but we certainly shall know when man reflects God. Then we shall know it. So, starting out with God's likeness, he says, then we will understand it when we reflect God. Before, it is all a question of approaching it, of admitting it first, and approaching it and recognizing it. So you have all those terms in it that have to do with mind, of that recognition, apprehension, knowing, and so on. The Revelator tells us of a new heaven and a new earth. Have you ever pictured this heaven? It's again his mind. Have you ever pictured, have you ever had in mind an image, a picture, this heaven and earth inhabited by beings under the control of supreme wisdom? Have you ever pictured that? And she leaves it with a question mark, saying, well, have you ever pictured this heaven and this earth inhabited by beings under the controls of wisdom? Up to this point, we have pictured it under the control of thinking, perhaps, or under the control of knowing, but that is not what is necessary. There are beings that are spiritual. This leads us to the second subtone, namely the spirit, which we have epitomized and said, well, therefore man must free himself from the belief that man is separate from God. So that's the next first step. The first step was to admit to ourselves that man is God's own likeness. Therefore, we have to separate us from the belief that we are separate from God. So let us rid ourselves of the belief that man is separate from God and obey only the divine principle, life and love. Here is the great point of departure for all true spiritual growth. So, again, mind is the point of departure. Mind is the beginning. Spiritualization begins with mind. How does it begin? First it says, well, begin by first admit for yourself that man is God's own likeness. You admit it first. You haven't understood it yet. You haven't reflected it yet. But go and admit it first. But if you admit it, then the subtone of spirit says, well, then you have to free yourself from the belief that you are separate. If you admit that you are one with God, or God is one with you, that man is God's own likeness, which is a unity, which is a coexistence, then the second step is always spirit that separates and says, then you can't also admit that you are separate from God, so let that go. And this is then the great point of departure for all true spiritual growth, because we cannot have spiritual growth, we cannot have unfoldment, evolution, as long as we have a duality, because the opposite would constantly hold us back, would constantly stand in the way, would constantly limit our steps. So only when we have made that separation completely from the false, we give room to the unfoldment of the idea. So first we admit that man is that idea, then we separate ourselves from the other belief, from the counterfeit belief, and that triggers off a spiritual evolution. So we know where to start. Then there is a third subtone of soul, which we have said, even when it is difficult for himself to accept his genuine being. You can see to accept his genuine being is identifying oneself with our true identity. This is another admittance that we have to admit really, or accept our true, genuine being. And this is not always easy, as we know from our lives. Here she shows it in an extreme case. She says it is difficult for the sinner to accept divine science. For a sinner, well, a sinner is not a moral sinner. He's a sinner that goes against the spiritual, against God. He who wants not to, he who wants to be separate from God and wants to work in his own orbit and has his own life and therefore goes against God. That is what is meant by a sinner. He has difficulty in accepting divine science because science exposes his nothingness. He exposes that he should not really go against the principle of being and not elaborate his own personality and adore his own personality and think that he knows better than God and there is no God. All this is that which hinders really the acceptance of divine science. But the sooner error is reduced to its native nothingness. Here we have again the native nothingness of error. We have the sense of annihilation in the third part. The sooner man's great reality will appear. So the great reality will appear. Always when we have soul, it is the crystallization. That can be brought out by saying the dry land appeared in the third day, or in the third day that we can see the fruit tree has a seed within itself and will always reappear and reappear and reappear, always maintain its identity. Here it's the appearing of the identity. The great reality will appear, and his genuine being, that would be his true identity, the identity of his being, will be understood. So here it will be understood. She says, at present we do not know what God is. Then she shows the way through the step of spirit, and then in soul it will appear. We will understand it. So the destruction of error is by no means the destruction of truth and life, but is the acknowledgement of them. It's the acknowledgement of them. So the destruction is something good, is something we should welcome, when we see the destruction of error, we shouldn't think that there is something bad going on, something evil going on, but we should see that it is truth at work that establishes itself. So in this way, we really have a tone of soul, namely, also, the side note is man's genuine being. Genuine means authentic, of original stock, so to say. So the primeval idea of man will appear. She says, well, it is difficult for the sinner to accept divine science. And it is difficult not only for the sinner, it's difficult for every human being to accept divine science and to accept really that his own genuine being. This is already brought out also in the Bible, in John, in the letter of St. John, where he said, beloved, he said, now we are the sons of God. We are the sons of God. But it does not yet appear what we shall be. You see, at present we are the sons of God, but we don't know yet what it is. Sons of God, and does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, like here, we shall be like him. We find our identity with God, and therefore for we shall see him as he is. And every man that has this hope in him purifies himself, even as he is pure. So John was trying in his words at his time to bring out this very big point that we know that fundamentally we are the Son of God, but we have to make ourselves the sons of God. Only knowing fundamentally that we are may not mean that we understand what that means, that we are absolutely convinced of what that means. And it needs that working out of things step by step to see how we arrive really at that stage. Here we see it. So that's the subject of mind. So we can see in that subject that always that whole big tone of love that is there, that the point of departure really is the point of love, namely man is God's own image. See, you have a tone of love there because love always includes its own universe and says everything belongs to me, and because it belongs to me, it's already at the point of perfection and fulfillment. And it says, can you picture this new heaven? Can you picture this great fact of new heaven and a new earth? It's also a new earth. It's not no more the material sense of man and the universe. It's now the spiritual sense. Can you picture it? Can you sit back and can you lean back and say, what is really meant by that? Have you ever pictured a universe where in that picture you have no landscapes, where you have no things, where you have no persons? Have you ever pictured that heaven and that earth? I wonder. We always like to sit back and think something beautiful about God and man, but it's always beautiful materially. We see a beautiful man, we see a healthy man at the mortal. We see a beautiful universe, but it's a material universe. We see an absolutely harmonious universe of people, but it's a people universe, it's not an idea universe. Have you ever pictured a new heaven and a new earth? An earth, therefore, where in that consciousness there is no such thing as place, time, things, people. Have you ever pictured that? What then can there be? Not only ideas. That's how the whole chapter on spiritualism started. That the identities of being are only ideas. Nothing is real, but God and his idea was that sentence on page 71 on the top. And the question is now, can we spiritualize our thought to that point where we train ourselves, culture ourselves, into having a consciousness that can think only in terms of idea and not put this idea in person, place or things? Can we do that? You try it and you will see it's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to have just a view of ideas, just a universe of ideas. That's why she said, well, at present we do not know what man is, but we certainly shall know when man reflects God. When man reflects God, it is God's own likeness. It's that which God alone sees, that which God knows about himself. And God knows no landscape and no things and no people, no locality, no space, no time, nothing of that. Have you ever tried, she says here, have you ever pictured this heaven and earth inhabited just by beings that are spiritual? And there is where we have to begin, or else we will go on being spirits. We'll go on being spirits. As we sit here, we are 50 spirits sitting around here. Each one says, I like the spiritual, and each one says, but I'm a body. That spirit is in a body, it's within me. It's material, it's corporeal. These are spirits. We are spirits sitting around. How do we ever get away from that? So spirits are not only a question that there is a belief that after death there are spirits, we sit right here as spirits, as corporeal spirit. And that is impossible. So the third part will show us how to get out of that. That we lose our sense of being corporeal spirits, corporeally spiritual, so to say. And the starting point is mind. And first to admit that only God has a likeness. And only God has its own likeness. And these are ideas. That gives us a mastery over an idea universe, or a universe of ideas. And we do that by saying, all right, I leave away, I separate myself from the belief that man is separate from the God. I begin to see that there is only one universe, namely God's own universe. God being one with his own universe of ideas. And I do the step two. Then, she says, as we claim that, though it is difficult, she says, for us to accept divine sign. It is difficult, but it can be done. And so as we do that, then our genuine being will be understood, she says. Then little by little it crystallizes and we begin to see man as idea. In all my life I have only seen that for a split second. In all that long life, I've only seen that once for a split second. And it was so beautiful and so impressive that I feared it. Just as in the Old Testament, when those people began to see something about God, they all fell to the earth. They didn't look up. They all fell to the earth. I had the same experience. It was so big that it was so enormous that it wasn't quite a fear. It was more overpowering, an overpowering sense that you said to yourself, gosh, is that possible? And you drop your face to the earth, so to say. You go back. And then afterwards you say to yourself, I wish I could attain that so that it would stay with me. And that's what the textbook is doing. So statements about truth are not scientific truths. Let's know that for all our study. That we can state truth and truth and truth and truth, but they are not scientific truths until we have them understood spiritually. And understand them spiritually means that they have no material concomitant anymore. Then we have already fulfilled that first subject here. All right, we make a break.